Priestess and the Cauldron, a podcast featuring Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, two out-of-the-broom-closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each show, Elvira and Phoenix will help you create rituals, make spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long-ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Phoenix, take it away.
Wow. We're back again.
Yep.
We're taking it away. I love it.
Where are we taking it?
I don't know, but let's go take it on the road, and I've got a road out there we can do it on.
Ba-dum-bum.
Yeah, there we go. I feel like a vaudeville act today. I don't know why. Maybe it's just my state of mind of the way the week has been going. So, obviously, here we are. Our subject matter, of course, is Aphrodite, but we are doing our check-in. And I always love doing this to Phoenix because I kind of jump the gun and I go, so, how was your week? And she either has something really, you know, like something to say of a babbly, or she'll look at me kind of going, huh? Sure.
I never remember how my week was.
Your week comes and goes.
Yeah, it's funny because I, in one of my traditions, anytime we have a meeting or whatever, we start with a check-in. Like, you know, what's going on? How are you right now? And I always can't think of what to say. Like, how am I right now? I'm just very present. And so, because I'm so present, I can't remember anything in my life. It's actually been a very normal week. There's not much to report.
There you go.
Yeah, I tried to take a day off yesterday,
uh-huh.
but that didn't work out.
Uh-huh. Well, I know you tried to take a day off on Saturday, and that didn't work out.
No, I've been trying to take days off for a while now, and it's just not working out for me. So I might just have to, I talked to one of the employees at Milk and Honey, and she said, you're just going to have to go away. That's the only way you can actually have a day off, is
right.
if you're not in range.
Right. Or you just literally turn your phone off and you're away by virtue of that.
Yeah. Well, and Thursday was because I forgot I needed to take care of something, and Thursday was absolutely the last day it could be taken care of.
Right.
You know, things like that.
I know.
I mean, pretty normal. Mm-hmm. Nothing. There's 2 weeks left of school for my child, and that's tripping me out because normally I always go to witch camp in the summer.
Uh-huh.
Normally it's like, oh, school's out, it's time for witch camp. Those two things totally feel like they coincide, and it doesn't feel like that. It doesn't feel like school could possibly be over already. It doesn't feel like witch camp's not that far away. None of these things feel real.
That's interesting.
Timing has been off for me all year.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of that is also to do, I mean, honestly, with what has happened up here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the fires
yeah.
and the things that displacement of people and
the weather has been off.
And the weather has been off.
It's been the spring. You know, I've lived in the house I'm in now for 8 years, I think, maybe a little bit longer than that. I know the cycle.
Mm-hmm.
I know when things come into bloom.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't do that on their schedule this year. They were
right.
all delayed.
Right.
So it feels off.
Yeah.
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 But besides that, I'm great. How are you, Elvira? Besides global warming and everything being wrong
right.
in the world.
In the world.
How are you?
Let me think. Well, it isn't that difficult. I decided I had a really nice Mother's Day. I was able to go out with a friend locally here and where I live, and we had a really nice, you know, meal and, you know, got to share some stuff because we're kind of getting to know each other. And then I met another friend later in the day for coffee who's the mother of a very, very dear friend of my daughter's since, you know, elementary school. And so we had coffee and chatted, and then I came home and got to FaceTime my daughter and have that little experience of motherly, you know, things and all the rest of it. And then I started working on a vision board, which I've completed and it's sitting over here by the side. But, you know, I had to put stuff back that I had used, the things that were no longer. And she's going to notice a lot of her cards from her store, which I obviously got at the store.
There's a few images.
Yes, there are.
Familiar.
And I went to put the bag up, one of the bags, and I had a two-step stool ladder, and it was, you know, I got on it, and I've got my leg up and one leg up, and then I didn't, the bag was heavier, and I was trying to lift it, and instead of lifting it, it went backwards, and I went backwards. So I basically, the knee locked in the opposite, didn't break, but the knee locked, and so obviously I was in a lot of pain.
Yeah.
Very concerned, and my friend who, you know, I have a roomie, and he came bouncing out when I said, you know, and we looked at it, and I mean, you know, he said, doesn't look broken, checked it, and,
yeah.
You know, I'm like, hyperventilating,
right.
And, you know, scared, because not only does this impair my ability to walk, et cetera, I will be, you know, going off in a month and almost half
right.
to Arkansas flying in a plane.
Right.
This is, you know, so I'm like panicking. So I did all the things I was supposed to do, had a terrible night's sleep because obviously not only was it pain, but I was scared, and wound up going on Monday, calling in and not going to work at Luckily Mojo, and which was a funny thing about how that day worked out. But I got to the chiropractor, and he checked it and gave me an adjustment and looked at it, and you know, he didn't say anything broken. My very dear friend, who also is an RN nurse, eventually I contacted her. She came with extra ice packs and a cane. I had a walking stick that is a beautiful wood walking stick, but it was my first husband's, and he was 6 foot. So
it's not a cane.
It's not able to do much of anything.
No, it's not to help you walk just around normal life.
No. So I got all of these things set up because I thought, well, you know, I don't know how I'm going to be. And she checked it, and she says, no, it's very bruised. Okay. So I gave myself another day, but all of Monday I was booked solid. Mm-hmm. So they kept telling people to call on my business phone, and so I was doing that with my leg up, you know, and all the rest of it. And that was the way I was for 2 days because I didn't go in, and was booked solid for 2 days. Went to work on Wednesday and then was able to literally walk around. And I had my cane, but I actually didn't use it. I was doing pretty good. It was sort of like a, so I've been slowly working the process, continuing the icing and, you know, all the rest of it. And I happen to have there's a machine that my chiropractor let me use that helps stimulate the growth, you know, the cellular healing process. And so I've been using that and actually finally got to walk the dogs. They were like,
that's good.
Oh, my God, Mom, can you walk us? So, you know, it seems to be better. It's still got, you know, I mean, I've still got to be sure I don't, you know, climb ladders and do stuff
take
like that.
Take it easy.
Take it easy. And my week has been very concerned with my physical well-being. And interesting enough, I kept Louise Hayes and her book. I looked it up, and, you know, joints are flexibility and, you know, things of, you know, moving forward and all that. But knees is ego and pride.
Interesting.
And I kept going, ego and pride, ego and pride. How, you know, because I do have an ego, obviously, and I'm proud of the things
everybody
I do.
Everybody does, yes.
But I'm like going, is it diseased? Is it a problem? You know? And I came up with the fact that, in actuality, I do, because what it is that my ego won't ask for help, and my pride of being able to do things all by myself.
Yeah.
And those were the things
that shook you up a little bit,
compromised my whole point of reference. And, you know, I had to ask to be taken to the chiropractor. I had asked,
I
needed assistance.
Yeah.
And, you know, the problem is when you live in an area where you got a bunch of older people, you know, it's kind of interesting where your mindset goes.
Right.
Of being old, et cetera, et cetera. But anyway, so there we are.
Well, I'm glad you're all right.
Yes, I am much better. And, you know, I feel confident that you know, things will get better. I'll be able to get on a plane and take my luggage and do those, you know, incredibly intelligent things that travelers have to do these days.
Right. Yes. Yeah. It's not fun to travel when you're not feeling 100%.
I know. No. And on that, we have Aphrodite. Not that I can think of a great segue.
What a transition.
Yeah, well, not really.
You know what's sexy when you have a broken leg?
What?
A cast. Super sexy, and then you can draw and write on it. That makes me think of Aphrodite.
Does that?
See?
It worked. It worked. Okay.
I apologize.
It's all right. It was a lame situation, but there is no real sexy way to go from an icky knee to Aphrodite.
True. It's true.
So we'll just go there now. Okay, Aphrodite. She's a Greek goddess of love.
And ...
Yes. Many things that we are going to talk about.
Yeah.
So I'm going to let you jump in.
Oh, okay. All right. So whenever we do shows on gods or goddesses, I have like a soapbox of things I feel is important to say. So let's start there on my soapbox.
That sounds good. I like it.
Because I love it. So we're going to talk about Aphrodite, and we're talking about Aphrodite and Greek culture as if it's one thing.
Uh-huh.
It isn't, uh-huh. Right? So it's really hard for us as modern pagans to fully grasp and grok all of these concepts because our cultural lens is what it is.
Uh-huh.
And when we think of Greece, we think of the country of Greece
uh-huh.
as it is right now.
Uh-huh.
That's not what it would have been like in the time that Aphrodite was born. That's not what it would have been like in the time Aphrodite was heavily worshipped.
Uh-huh.
And for each town and each village and each part of the countryside, she was worshipped differently. She had different names.
Uh-huh.
She had different epithets. She ruled different things. And so we have to keep all of that complexity in mind
uh-huh.
when we try to minimize her to Aphrodite, the sexy naked goddess of love. Because it's much more complex. I'm taking off my sweater. It's getting hot.
Well, that's good because we were actually freezing in here.
Aphrodite gets me all hot.
I know. Please, we're going to get, you know, a little bit changed here.
Yeah. So
okay.
That's my soapbox is, you know, we're going to talk about all of these things as if it's one subject, but it's actually lots of different things that
mm-hmm.
have been all squished together
mm-hmm.
to make a conglomerate of Aphrodite.
Aphroditeisms.
Yes, but it's much more complicated than that. And I think, you know, I think we as modern humans do a disservice to the gods when we just try to make them so one note and simple.
Right.
They're much more complicated than that.
And because back when these were happening, first of all, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have mass transit. We didn't have all kinds of things that made everything one. And every little location was their own city-state. They were just, that was who and what they were, which, you know, taken through the centuries going into feudal kingdoms, et cetera, all of this was part of small sections of the world having certain things, and gods and goddesses were just that. Certain
right.
parts of their world were just them.
Right, right.
So I find that with Aphrodite, there are, and it's going to be kind of hard here because we have Aphrodite
mm-hmm.
and then we have Venus. And
right.
Aphrodite is Greek and Venus is Roman. But we get into from the little city-states in Greece, the islands that were specifically had their Aphrodite, then what we get into is the country, and then we have Rome and the Roman civilization taking over the world, so
right.
to speak, as they
literally,
do it,
yeah.
and taking on these different gods and goddesses, and Aphrodite became Venus. So there is a bit of the gray area that we may wind up flowing in a little bit, but we'll try to
yeah.
stay specifically with Aphrodite, and she did come from another series of goddesses
yeah. Yeah.
of other cultures that had been even before the Greeks.
Yeah. It is likely that Aphrodite comes more from the Middle East,
mm-hmm.
and there is connection to Ishtar, and then there's an ancient Palestinian goddess called Ashtart,
mm-hmm.
and it's likely there is some threads of connection between
right.
the Greek Aphrodite the Roman Venus, Ishtar, Ashtart, and more.
And you
know, more. We can't actually, you know for sure, but this is an ancient goddess who ruled a lot more than just sexuality and love, and has sort of been pigeonholed into this one aspect.
Right. And it's because she's female, and because of her sexual femaleness, it's that it comes into where they want to put her.
Right.
So some of the goddesses that people encountered when they were congealing into larger groups became moms, and the others became sex objects.
Right.
And then, you know, down the way we had the crone and the death.
What's interesting, though, is she is the sex object. That was the word that almost escaped my brain. She is the sex object. No offense, my lady. But she's also not a slut.
No.
Right? This is a sex positive, like, woman, you rule your body and you screw whoever you want to screw and don't worry about the consequences. Well, worry about the consequences, but don't worry about being judged for it.
Exactly.
This is a very sex positive goddess, and I think I don't want to minimize that either, you know, because she does sort of get this tart reputation.
Yeah.
And in many of the tales, and again, we have to remember that most of the Greek stories that have been written down through a patriarchal lens.
Right.
This is not where their origins likely were.
Correct.
And she's often portrayed as being kind of shallow, being a little bit impatient. It could be a little bit cruel, but that's how the Greek gods are. I mean,
male or female, whatever they kind of had their.
Yeah, roots. They all have flaws. They all have realness. They're not perfect, enlightened beings. They're imperfect.
So, in terms of actually, one of the things, there's some interesting things because obviously. To try and do a linear structure of she came from here, we have this energy in here. We may not make it that way, but then I don't think our shows usually have such a linear nature anyway.
No, we're all over the place.
Yeah, we are.
Good luck keeping up, listeners. Good luck.
Yeah. But I found it interesting that it was, you know, that Cyprus was really like the focal place of her.
Yeah.
And the dynamics of that were, I just went, wow, Cyprus, that's interesting. Because, you know, we don't really think of Cyprus as Greece. It is part of it now.
Right. But. And I think that's an interesting part of it, too, is if you look at some of these ancient Greek stories, not just about Aphrodite, but about many of the other gods, some of these islands, like Cyprus and Crete, have old origin, old goddess stories, old information that makes it to the mainland at one time or another, but some of those stories, the story of the Minotaur and the Labyrinth from Crete is a whole thing that is much deeper and older than we give it credit for.
Right.
And I think looking at a goddess like Aphrodite who comes from the island, there is something more there to explore if you feel interested in learning more about her.
Right, right. And of course, you know, the birth story is really exciting, you know. I mean, she obviously comes from, it's sort of an interesting thing. Hi, I come from the great father's castrated body part.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So,
tell the story.
Oh, tell a story?
Tell a story for the kids.
Oh, well, it's a story. I have to find the story first. Basically, you have Cronos, which is, you know, the head of the Titans, and kids decided they didn't like him, so they decided to kill him.
Yeah.
And part of it was castrating him, and so they threw the parts out, and the penis was thrown into the ocean, and as it did, it ejaculated, which presented the foam, and out of the foam came this beautiful woman riding on a scallop shell, naked. You know, and she kind of came forward. And, you know, some said it was a red foam. you know, like the color of the foam and the ejaculation was red. And, you know, so there's different versions of the ejaculation. I was fascinated more by the fact that she is a sexual goddess of the feminine energy coming from, of course, the male penis.
Right, right. There is no mother here. Because
no.
even this isn't spoken to clearly in the stories, but even if you look at the energy of the ocean,
mm-hmm.
the ocean is ruled by Poseidon, who
mm-hmm.
is a god, who is
mm-hmm.
a male energetic.
Right.
So you have the genitals of a male god thrown into the realm of a male god, and
right.
from that, the most beautiful, alluring, and sexual woman is born.
Which, if you want to speak to the consciousness of that culture, that was what the, I'm going to get a little patriarchal, matriarchal thingy, is that the female being gorgeous and beautiful comes out of the male for the sake of the male and is there to be adored and utilized
right.
by the male.
Right.
Rather than she was basically a very powerful female goddess that was brought forth from the waters of the womb of the Great Mother, where we didn't have a male ruler, and she
yeah.
came forward from that, and out of that she was, you know, moved forward as the female energy
yeah.
embodied in this beautiful woman, which had control over her body and her sexuality.
Yeah. Yeah, and the other thing I find really interesting is she's connected to war because supposedly Ares is one of her favorite lovers, and he's the god of war.
Right.
But there's actually evidence that a much older version of Aphrodite, so again, like in the Middle East from Syria
mm-hmm.
and places in that area, she was a warrior goddess.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, in Sparta, Aphrodite was worshipped quite widely, and they are a very...
matriarchal?
No, militant.
Militant.
They're focused very much on war and
right.
battle and fighting.
Right.
In fact, Spartans raised their girls to be warriors.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone was raised to fight. Everyone.
What does this sound like? Israel?
Right.
Every girl.
Everyone serves.
Serve.
Yeah.
Everyone serves.
I was talking about this with my partner earlier today. So, you know, it's many of some of the ancient images of Aphrodite from the Middle
mm-hmm.
East, she's in military attire. She's
right.
dressed for battle. And in one of the other, in Corinth, one of the other areas where there's pretty clear worship of her,
mm-hmm.
she was adopted as the patroness of the city.
Mm-hmm.
This is, Corinth, I believe, is in Sparta, right? Yeah.
I believe so, yes.
Right? Yeah?
Yes.
Geography is not my strong suit. But
sure.
it's more than just, you know, the nice little explanation is
uh-huh.
Ares is the god of war. And what's the opposite of war? Love. And Aphrodite is the goddess of love.
Right.
And so they hold the polarity.
Right.
And I think that's shite, personally. I don't like it.
Well,
it does fit into a nice little package.
And then they throw the fact that she in... and see, that in itself, but she's married to Hephaestus.
Right. Which she's not happy about.
Which she's not happy about. And so then she, you know, in the traditional cuckolds him,
yeah.
you know, everywhere she turns. Of course, I happen to like how Hephaestus kind of got back at her and Ares with the silver net that he basically fashioned. And in their naked lovemaking, it basically entrapped them. And the entire pantheon of the Greek gods and goddesses saw them in their nakedness, sexually engaged, and they couldn't get out of it. So they were kind of like made the laughing stock of the group. So in one way, if you look at even the thought of that, take it to a bigger point, is that, you know, when you do things that are out of, I don't want to say, structured norms, but out of the guidelines
mm-hmm.
of your society,
yeah,
and you're caught,
yeah,
you know, the sense is you are humiliated and you are lessened,
right?
Which, you know, maybe
yeah.
some of our present people out there should take into note.
What's interesting to me as well is she's not. So we have the Titans, right? This
uh-huh.
is the other thing I always like to talk about with the Greeks. We have the Titans, and the Titans are the old gods. They are the forces of nature.
Right.
Right? And Zeus is born of the old gods.
Mm-hmm.
But what Zeus and the Olympians actually represent is the tide of patriarchy that comes into Greece.
Mm-hmm.
Before the Olympians, the gods that were worshipped by people were the forces of nature.
Right.
Zeus comes in and it starts to shift to a much more patriarchal system, which is something you see happen all over the globe at different times in our evolution as human beings.
Mm-hmm.
But the Olympians were all equals. The Olympians were like the siblings of the monarchy, right?
Right, right, right.
And Aphrodite is one of those. She's one of the Olympians. She's not one of Zeus's kids. She's not a demigod. She's one of the big cheese.
Right.
But Zeus is worried that she's too beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And I have feelings about Zeus I won't get into right now, but what a piece of work.
We'll have to go to him. We're going to do one.
We're doing two gods.
We will might as well. Yeah. I think we've got...
We have a Zeus show scheduled.
Yes,
I'll try to behave myself. But, you know, he's worried that she's so beautiful and so alluring that she's going to cause fights because men and gods are going to clamor to try and get her hand in marriage or whatever. So he forces her to marry Hephaestus, who is the blacksmith of the Olympian pantheon, right?
Uh-huh.
But Hephaestus is also... lame is the word you use.
Crippled.
Right?
Yeah. Lame.
Yeah.
Lame.
So he's not Ares, this fighting warrior, manly man,
macho man,
crippling muscles. And, you know, he's a hard working man.
Right.
But he's not Ares.
Right.
And she doesn't like him.
Mm-hmm.
And she's very upset to be married off to him. And so she makes her unhappiness known. And she doesn't try to hide the fact that she sleeps with other men.
Nope.
She just does whatever the hell she wants.
Yeah. Yeah. But in truth, it's like trying to harness the feminine energy in the form of this goddess.
Yeah.
And then what it does is it breaks out and does its own thing. She does her own thing. And then there are these repercussions that take place.
And interesting as well is Hephaestus was so stoked, like, all right, that he makes her this beautiful girdle, the girdle of Aphrodite, which is one of the magical tools of ancient Greece, the girdle of Aphrodite.
Mm-hmm.
And it is made of gold and it has all this magic woven into it. And it's this amazing thing. And when she wears it, it makes her even more irresistible. It actually works against him to create this magical tool for her that she doesn't actually need. But now she has it. So now she wears this girdle, and all creatures fall at her feet.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So it's one of those things where she is a powerful goddess.
Yes.
In her own right. But that power, it's like the process is that you can be petty and small and negative, or you can utilize it for a higher, better purpose. Either way, it's just there, but you need to, and you know, when somebody gets angry and they do something because they're angry, so they start doing stupid stuff, and then, you know, after their anger is kind of downplayed, they go, oh my goodness, I didn't mean to get so angry and say those terrible things about my husband to him or my girl or whatever. And that's when, truthfully, we get them as clients.
Yes, this is true.
But it's because you don't use discrimination.
Yeah, right?
And she's a goddess that chooses what she wants to do when she wants to do it, and she doesn't really care about the consequences.
No, and she doesn't have to.
And she doesn't have to, but then, you know.
Yeah.
So, what else would we like to discuss about this wonderful
goddess?
We
should probably take a break real quick.
Oh, yes, that's right.
And then I have, can talk more about some of her names and origins, and then I have some cool, like, ritual-y things.
Ooh.
Offering.
Okay.
Anyway, we'll be back.
Okay.
You're listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned, as more magic is coming your way right after these messages.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ollie, Sundays 3 to 4:30, the Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, Tuesdays 5 to 6, Fit and Foxy, Madame Nadia and Jaya Danya, Wednesdays 6 to 7, and The Witch, the Priestess and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Phoenix LeFay, Fridays 6 to 7. All times Pacific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
Oh, refreshing. I feel refreshed. One of the things I do want to mention is just some of the things that we might want to say about different things that are part of her worship in terms of like the dove. The dove is a big one there, and you know, in terms of the symbol or the process, as well as frog and swan. I love the fact that her chariot is pulled by swans.
Mm-hmm. I think that's true of Apollo too, isn't it? Apollo's connected to swans too.
I believe so. Yeah. I believe so.
What I find that this is so non-sequitur, but I've been watching this television show. We talk about TV a lot, I realize. But it's called The Supersizers Go, and it is a show, a British television show, where they reenact a different time period, mostly to learn about the food.
Right.
It's amazing.
Right.
But I had no idea how much ancient cultures ate swan.
Swan.
Swan. Swan and peacocks were eaten a lot in ancient cultures.
Ooh. Well,
yeah.
Don't know. Maybe they're not gamey like.
I don't know. I don't know, but if you're a worshiper of Aphrodite, maybe you want to try it. I don't know where you can buy swan.
And please avoid going out and killing the cute swans in the pond.
Yeah, please don't do that. We're not endorsing any swan murder, but, you know, it would be interesting.
Yeah, yeah. That is a non sequitur if ever there was one.
Yes.
And, of course, dolphin because of the water. The one I love is bee. B-E-E, the swarming kind.
Yeah.
And that's because of her connection with, and it's interesting now, I'm going to have to do the Greek ophi, which are the souls.
Yes,
and
right.
The souls in terms of that. And so it was symbolic of the spiritual gathering of the souls.
Interesting. We modern pagans like to go, well, this goddess is just like this goddess, so they're like the same. And I am not one of those people. I'm actually very anti doing that. However, people often say, oh, Aphrodite is like Freya.
Mm-hmm.
That is like Hathor. Mm-hmm. What's interesting is both, or all three of those goddesses, Hathor, Aphrodite, and Freya, all have a connection to bees.
Right.
Fascinating.
And, you know, so of course, if you're going to, I don't want to go out and say capture a bee, but the honeycomb is also something you might want to consider using in magic, which we'll talk a little bit.
Or giving as offerings.
Or giving as offerings. So
another thing I found really interesting, I know a lot of bee people.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of pagans, especially in the reclaiming tradition, that are super into bees, bee priestesses and whatnot. And I have, there are these boxes, you know, like a good size box, like a salad plate size box, shaped like a honeycomb, that
pattern.
And I have seen many priestesses use this shaped box for holding magical workings, for putting in wishes or goals or desires or things like that, and giving them to the hives.
Oh, nice.
So if you are a bee person or you're looking to work with that energy with Aphrodite, you might consider getting one of those honeycomb shaped boxes.
Yes.
It's kind of fun.
Yes, yes. And obviously, we will post on Facebook our altar to Aphrodite, but I was out trying to find in my backyard the things that I could use, and of course I found roses, which is another one of
roses is a big one.
Big one with her.
Yeah, and myrtle.
And myrtle, and apple and pomegranate are for her fruits, which is you know, when you talk about the pomegranate, this is where the symbol of her being life and death.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because of the circumstances. But I was fascinated that I wound up with, you know, these different things that I didn't think, like pomegranate, I didn't think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, the number four is also sacred to her.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I'm not 100% sure about this, but I'm going to say it anyway. Oshun, who is a goddess of the African diaspora, I'm pretty sure her sacred number is four as well, and she's sort of a similar vibe to Aphrodite in the African diaspora.
Uh-huh.
So
uh-huh.
Interesting that that number four.
The four, yeah.
Yeah, her day of celebration is often the fourth day of the month.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And in the ancient calendar, that was during the Hecatombeon month, whatever the heck that was.
Okay.
Now it's somewhere between July and August.
Okay.
On the modern calendar. But that is also the Aphrodisia Festival.
Right.
Which is a specific celebration of Aphrodite, and it has a lot to do with her and Adonis and their relationship.
Which we might want to go ahead and throw in because we also, you know, in terms of her, we know Mars and Aries,
yep.
You know, Mars, Aries, and her, and Hephaestus. But Adonis was, she wanted to hide Adonis from Hephaestus, and so she stuck him in a box and asked Persephone to hide it down in the underworld. Unfortunately, Persephone opened the box and fell in love with Adonis, of course.
Poor Adonis, all his goddesses worshiping him.
And so they began, she wouldn't give Adonis back to Aphrodite, and so there was this kind of war starting.
Okay,
so,
I have never heard this story before.
Really?
Yeah, keep going, I love it.
Okay, and Zeus decided he'd step in, as always, you know, and he decided what he was going to do is they had to make a deal, they had to bargain here. They would take one-third of the year would be with Persephone.
Yeah.
And one-third with, and I have to get this right because I want to make sure I'm giving correct information, but one-third was going to be with Persephone, one-third with Aphrodite, and one-third was on his own.
Right.
And he was basically likened unto a vegetation god and the stag and the, you know, all of that kind of stuff. But it was fascinating that was how they decided, he decided each. You get one-third, one-third, and one-third.
Right.
But one-third actually gets given to himself,
right.
Which, you know, Persephone didn't get.
No. Well,
I mean, she got half of the year down in the underworld and half of the year up with mom and
yeah.
The rest of the stuff.
She is queen of the underworld.
Oh, that's true.
No.
Adonis wasn't, but okay.
Adonis is just a dude.
He was just a dude. So, but that was really interesting, and I'm like going,
I can't believe I've never heard that story.
Oh, really? Yeah, I was kind of struck by it. I'm like, okay, well, at least he gave one-third, one-third, and one-third. He was saying, and then they kind of went ahead and did that. So we got Adonis out of the way.
Right. We got Adonis out.
Got him out of the way. But, and it's interesting because I was also sitting here, and, you know, different symbols, like the comb and the thread
mm-hmm.
are very much a part of her, the things that you can use. Like the thread was Ariadne mm-hmm. and the labyrinth,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and we have, you know, the comb, her hair.
Yep.
So
this is also another Oshun symbol.
Exactly. But her companions, as they put it,
oh, yes.
were the Graces.
Right. Her girls.
Her girls.
Where my lady's at.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not even going to try to even say half of the names, but...
Of the Graces. Yeah.
But the one stood for brilliance,
yeah.
one stood for flowering, and the other one stood for heart's joy.
Hmm.
Which I thought was kind of nice.
We have a statue of the Graces at Milk and Honey, and it's very beautiful.
Yes, it is. It's a very well-known one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a replica
yeah.
of a famous
of a very well-known one. So...
Yeah.
But, yeah, so she, and copper was one of her, was a major, was her metal because in Cyprus it was the copper mines. So I kind of leave that as a offering to anyone that wants copper, like, you know, hey, let's go get copper and do it for Aphrodite.
I like also she was hooked up with Aeneas.
Oh, yes.
And I like the beginning. So one of the websites that I researched some of her stories, mm-hmm. they begin it like this. Another time, Zeus punished Aphrodite for beguiling her fellow gods into inappropriate romances. So basically Zeus is annoyed with her shenanigans.
Right.
So he uses his Zeusy powers to cause her to become infatuated with a mortal. And that mortal is Anchises.
Okay.
Apologies, because I know I'm slaughtering that. And then she mothers Aeneas.
Right.
Who supposedly is the first of the Roman emperors.
Well, they had to do something to get the Romans in there somewhere along the line.
Yeah, those darn Romans.
You know, and
always trying to take over.
Take over.
Got to be involved in everything.
So, what other wonderful things can we do here and talk about? You were going to do, so we got some of the things that we can use for her, the ceremonies, the ritual.
Yeah. And before we do that real quick, I also wanted to just name, you know, we talk about the epithets, right?
Right.
Greek system.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just Aphrodite, but it's Aphrodite da-da-da-da-da, right?
Right.
And so they have all these epithets. So some of hers, and again, you're going to get to hear me murder some Greek words here. How exciting is that? Aphrodite Pandemos, which is the Aphrodite of the people.
Right.
Right. Aphrodite Urania, the transcendent principles. Aphrodite Attica, the Aphrodite of that region of Greece. And then we have these others that are also cult names. So Acidalia, Caesarea, and Sarago, right? These are different regions of Greece where she was worshipped.
Mm-hmm.
And then we already said Cyprus, Lady of Cyprus, and Lady of Caesarea. So she was known as Aphrodite Caesarea and Aphrodite Cyprus.
Mm-hmm.
And those two places, it is debated whether she was born in Cyprus or Caesarea. It could be either.
Right.
So there we have some of her. And there are more than that. That's just like
a
tiny little sampling. And with all the Greek gods, I like to put out there, you know, because the point of talking about Aphrodite today is not to have anyone listening to the show walk away as an Aphrodite expert.
Right.
Because, no. But the goal is that maybe you learn about this goddess a little bit more than you might have known before, and you might go, hey, I'd like to know more about her. Maybe I'd like to set up a shrine, or maybe I'd like to read more and see if she's going to be my friend, right? So by talking about the epithets, the goal is the more research you do into Aphrodite, you might find a specific epithet, a specific face of Aphrodite that actually really fits for you,
right?
Because it's a wide range. It's Aphrodite of beauty, Aphrodite of making love, Aphrodite of happiness, Aphrodite of war, Aphrodite of battle. So you have all these options,
right?
All in the guise of Aphrodite. So explore that.
Mm-hmm.
Go forth and make shit up.
And make shit up. There you go. Well, I want to say one thing is that basically her cult occupied a main temple in Jerusalem up to 70 AD, and then it was turned over, changed only to Stella Marie. So she basically was transitioned. They couldn't get her anywhere out, so they transitioned her into that, and basically it became transitioned to the Christian. The only one they had, the only female they had was, you know, Mary.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting. And, of course, Stella Maria is another one of the ways, or, you know, the Mare Stella, the one of the ocean.
Right. Stella Mara.
She becomes part of that.
Yeah.
You know, as you go on. So it's like she didn't quietly seep off into the night. They just had to figure a way out to go down the road.
Right.
So,
well, if you don't mind,
no, go for
I
it.
Would like to read the Homeric hymn.
Oh, good.
All right, ready?
I'm ready.
I will sing of stately Aphrodite, gold crowned and beautiful, whose dominion spans from the heart of Cyprus to the hearts of all men. There in Cyprus, the moist breath of the western wind wafted over her the waves of the loud moaning sea in soft foam, and there she was greeted upon by the shore by nymphs and dryads. They clothed her with heavenly garments, On her head they put a fine, well-wrought crown of gold, and in her pierced ears they hung ornaments of diamonds and precious gold, and adorned her with gold necklaces over her soft neck and snow-white breasts, jewels which the nymphs and dryads wear themselves whenever they go to their father's house to join the lovely dances of the gods. And when they had fully decked her, they brought her to the gods, who welcomed her when they saw her, giving her their hands. Each one of them prayed that he might lead her home to be his wedded wife. So greatly were they amazed at the beauty of the violet-crowned Aphrodite. Hail, sweetly winning, coy-eyed goddess. Of Aphrodite, born in Cyprus, I will sing. She gives kindly gifts to men, smiles ever on her lovely face, and lovely is the brightness that plays over it.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
That's Homer.
Well, at least they still had wonderful things in speaking of her.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of that. Her priestesses were very, they were honored. They were the ones that taught the sexuality.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that when I think of this person, and I think of her as a person, maybe I should think of her as a goddess, a deity, but I kind of get more like she's someone that you talk with about that part of your life.
Right, right.
You know, and,
yeah.
But it's, as I keep saying, please, please, she's amoral.
Right.
You do not want to try and get her to work on your lover to be faithful.
Right.
Not the one.
Yeah, yeah.
But I really, and she's got it's interesting, they have different shows that they have used her character in.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's Clash of the Titans or whoever it is, you know,
yeah.
Somebody that they always put her in, you know, blonde curls and I don't know if they had blondes in the Greek times there.
I don't know.
I always thought they were more, you know, darker
right.
haired. And,
well, because the imagery that we most often see is from the Renaissance.
Right.
Right. That's that classic painting of Venus.
Right.
Right.
Being out on there with her tresses over her.
And she's got very, like, blonde, strawberry-ish
mm-hmm.
colored hair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was...
And she's pale.
She's pale.
She wouldn't have been.
No, she wouldn't have been. Mediterranean, they're not quite that
No,
pale.
And especially if she originated in the Middle East, she would have been quite dark.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So they kind of lightened it down the road. But that's what we have to look at, is the portrayals of what we see as society moved through its growth.
Right.
And the art and the artists and their renditions. It's probably why I like the statues. I mean, marble statues. They're white or they have color, but they're statues. They're not they don't go into well, some of them get painted, but I mean they're different. They're a different feel.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and one of the things to know, and this is, you know, mostly Greek revival, so
mm-hmm.
This isn't necessarily, we can't know for sure how the Greeks did a lot of their worship.
Right.
But a lot of Greek ritual begins with a cleansing ceremony, and often that's
mm-hmm.
hand washing.
Mm-hmm.
With Aphrodite, you would use, you know, blessed water with rose petals in it, for
mm-hmm.
example, right? Rose is
mm-hmm.
her big
mm-hmm.
thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you do whatever process you want to create sacred space, and you know there's definitely some Hellenic traditional reconstruction ways
mm-hmm.
of doing it
mm-hmm.
that's easily findable,
right?
But then often there is a sacrifice made in Hellenic rituals that you give a sacrifice to the goddess, and this, you know, typically modern pagans, we sacrifice food or a cake or whatever
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's fine, but sacrifice should hurt a little bit, so it, you know, it's not that you need to cut yourself, I don't mean that, but you want to give her something that isn't just easy for you to give.
Right, right.
And then there is a process of pouring libations. The Greeks love wine,
mm-hmm.
their gods love wine,
mm-hmm.
so when you offer a libation, you know, you want to pour wine, so
right.
that's, you know, not a problem.
Because of whatever's going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, if there's addiction issues for you, then choose something else. But again, keep in mind the cultural context. The ancient Greeks weren't drinking water. most of our ancestors weren't drinking water because water was dirty.
They
and
didn't
made you
yeah.
sick.
And you made them sick.
Yeah.
So it does have a reason yeah. behind that. And it's interesting when you think about the libations, the offerings. One of the things they made a point of, at least in some of, in a lot of the readings I've done, is that hers was a bloodless sacrifice.
Yeah.
Because it may be something that you give up for with a little bit of discomfort, but you're not killing animals or humans or anything.
Yeah.
It's that she's a goddess of love. You're not going to do that.
Right.
Wrong thing to play with. So.
Yeah.
But, and you know, blessing, rituals of blessing your genitals and mm-hmm. blessing your sexuality. These are things you can do now in a more modern version of what it is that she is part of.
Right.
We definitely will be doing a show next week on
yeah.
love magic.
Love magic.
So this is just a preliminary, like, taste of what we're going to be.
Yeah, we'll talk about nothing but love spells.
Oh, my goodness. It's going to be, a wash in here with feminine progesterone and estrogen. Anyway.
So on that note, are we done?
No, I don't think so. We got a few more minutes. We can throw some more stuff at everybody. You know, it's funny because I think the hardest thing I kept finding when I was doing research was it was Aphrodite Venus, Aphrodite Venus,
yeah.
Aphrodite Venus. And I'm like going, no.
Right.
You know, I know there are other goddesses of other more ancient traditions or you know, civilizations, but they really were into putting Venus right there with Aphrodite. And I'm like, no, I want to separate them because there was a difference. One
yeah.
became more state-orientated of the Republic.
Right, as all Roman gods.
As all Roman gods and goddesses were, or one that was, yes, a step down from the forces of nature,
mm-hmm.
a little more controlled and rationalized,
because mm-hmm.
they were really into intellect. The Greeks
yeah.
were very
oh,
much
yeah.
into that. And, you know, so platonic love, but then you couldn't get away from the fact that the body
mm-hmm.
wanted and needed and desired this. So they kind of had a way to do that, but then it all changed when they threw it into Venus.
Yeah.
And of course, now it's just kind of like thrown together in like a stew, and it's not really.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but I have all the, you know, all the Venus statues and all the Venus things that they did. And then I'm like, okay, I don't want to know that. I'm trying for Aphrodite.
Right.
But,
yeah. And I think for those two goddesses, the crossover is, smoother.
Yes.
Than with some of the other gods that they try to go, oh, this is the same as this. Like the
yeah.
Venus Aphrodite combo is a little bit more, I don't know, it feels easier for some reason.
Uh-huh.
It's like it makes more sense.
Well, it's sex.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's kind of like,
yeah.
and it tends to flow that way.
Right.
And actually, it became, again, more structured into the priestesses were taught, I have to say this, it's not really because they said it anywhere, but when I finished reading all this, I felt this was a school for high-priced call girls.
Right.
Because they were taught how to be with the higher
right.
echelon.
Okay, so I'm going to put it to you this way. Have you watched Firefly?
Yes.
This is like Inara.
Okay. See, there are times when I do actually have a crossover into other things, you know, but oh well. Yeah. So, but yeah, that it was really interesting because I kind of went, this is kind of over here and
right.
and stuff, and everybody kind of accepted this as part of what they did.
Yeah.
So, but well, I happen to like Aphrodite. I guess it's because it's more, it's a raw feeling.
Sure.
So.
Sure. I actually work with Aphrodite a lot. Funnily enough, when I do love work, I work with Aphrodite a lot because I feel as an impartial goddess in the situation I'm bringing to her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, assuming she doesn't fall in love with anybody involved in the situation, she will kind of just tell you like it is.
Yeah.
My favorite story actually is the god Eris, the goddess of chaos,
mm-hmm.
throws an apple into a room, and in the room are Aphrodite, Hera, and Athena, and he says this, On the apple is 10 to note this is for the most beautiful of all the gods. So of course the three of them are like, oh well, that was meant for me. That's a gift for me. And so the three of them begin to fight and they can't make any decisions. So they go to Paris, the prince of the Trojans, and they ask Paris to decide. And he's like, oh, I don't really want to be in this here. And Athena offers him, you know, skill in battle and to be successful. And Hera offers him all of these things of riches and all of this. And Aphrodite says, well, I can get you the most beautiful woman in the world. And he chooses Aphrodite. And that's when she gets Helen of Sparta and the Trojan War. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, I was wondering when we were going to at least throw that one out, you know, as far as the story of where Aphrodite kind of comes in.
Right,
so.
Right. And the whole time Aphrodite stayed loyal to Paris, to the prince of the Trojans, where Hera and Athena joined the other side.
Right.
Yeah.
That's, you know.
Yep.
And on that, I think we can now come to the point. We've given all the stories and touched on as many as we could think of that were, you know, publishable.
And as Elvira mentioned, next week is a show all about love magic, so that'll be fun. Yeah. And next week we'll be doing the show not together.
No.
I'll be away, so we'll be doing the show from...
Remoting is how they put it in terms of what
we do.
That'll
be great. I'll have just gotten a fresh tattoo, so I'll be uncomfortable.
Well, today was my day with my knee, so you will have your tattoo.
I'd rather have a tattoo than F up my knee.
I totally would, you know, go with that too.
Yeah, anyway.
Considering. But I feel we have, you know, given forth as much as we can.
Yeah. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, and have a wonderful week, and we will chat with you next week.
Yep.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Friday at 6 p.m. Pacific and will be available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website, and that's at www.witchpriestesscauldron.com. Again, that's witchpriestesscauldron.com. On behalf of Elvira, Phoenix, Alan, and myself, Gwion Raven, a big merry meet and merry part and merry meet again. Blessed be.